Good morning. This is Char Rogers with Advanced Lifestyle on this gorgeous sunny morning. And I am so excited to have with us a celebrity, a real chef celebrity, Jason Weyrich. We crossed paths about 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, actually. And I was amazed at his talents with food and also why he had these talents with food. And so I asked him if he would please give us a half hour to 40 minutes to give us some of his knowledge and information. Jason, actually, before we start, this is being recorded on allswell.org. So if you have friends that are missing this call and would like to hear it, tell them they can go to that website. It may be a few hours. Actually, it'll maybe be into tomorrow before it's set up. So anyway, Jason, I would like you to start out by giving us a little bit of background of where you were physically and how this change came about in your life and what the need was for it. Of course, that gives the, from the, comes from the physical. So good morning, Jason. Thank you in advance for giving us your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me. Let's see. This was 8 years ago now, when I was 27, when I found out that I was diabetic. I was in the emergency room in a hospital in Austin, Texas, with one of the symptoms of diabetes, which is chronic infection. And I didn't know I was diabetic at the time. I probably should have, looking back on it. But the attending physician came in and, after taking some blood and running some tests, came up and said, "Did you know you were diabetic?" And I'm looking at him thinking, "No, I can't believe I'm diabetic." So that's where I was. And of course, I had every problem you could imagine. That goes along with diabetes. My eyesight was failing. I was overweight. Had some skin problems. Was always tired. I'd be wide awake, and within just about 2 or 3 minutes, I'd need to go to sleep. Just a host of problems, heart disease, of course, and the chronic infections. And it was kind of scary because I was not an overweight kid at all. I was athletic. I played basketball. I was always in shape. And just throughout my young adult life, that the weight crept on because of bad dietary choices. And basically, I ate the way my parents ate. And then I just acquired these problems from the time I was starting when I was 15 up until 27. And it's funny because I knew looking back, I knew I was diabetic for at least a couple of years before that because I had all the symptoms of it.
So you look at it as being dietary or environmentally
hereditary. Right. I mean, my parents were, my parents still are diabetic. My maternal grandmother was diabetic, and my middle brother is pre-diabetic, so there's a genetic disposition to go that way, but I found through most of the research I've done that we all have these genetic dispositions to go a certain way, but usually those aren't triggered until we're in a bad environment, and part of that environment is what we put into our bodies.
Okay, and then how was it you were introduced to this way of eating?
I was fairly lucky because I had a friend who was diabetic. In fact, we were engaged at the time. And, of course, we ate the same way. We looked the same way. And she happened to get diagnosed with it a year before I did. And, of course, we were both under 30 thinking there's no way we want to take drugs, and both of our doctors were telling us to take medication for this. So she got on the Internet and found Dr. McDougall's program, and she didn't even go through his program. She just went to the library and checked out some of his books, roughly followed his program, which is a low-fat, plant-based diet. And in less than a year, her diabetes was gone. And then it was just a couple months after that when I got diagnosed with it. And so I basically did the same thing she did. And I didn't even follow a strict regimen. I just took the idea of a low-fat vegan diet and created my own recipes, learned how to cook, and fairly quickly, it was actually a fairly easy transition. And in about 8 months, my diabetes was totally cured. And there are some people out there that don't want to admit that heart disease and diabetes and other things like that can be cured. And they want to say it's just in remission or it's managed, but it is a fact, a complete reversal of the disease. And I dropped from my heaviest to my lightest, I dropped 119 pounds.
Whoa. And so this not only changed your physical life, was this the first interest you really had in food? You hadn't been doing that much cooking or anything?
Well, I started learning how to cook before that. Actually went vegetarian a few years before I went vegan. But the problem was I was kind of stupid about it. Instead of eating a steak for dinner, which I had been doing before, and of course I was still getting it healthy and overweight. Instead of eating that steak, I would eat a cheeseburger's pizza with extra cheese. That sounds like an exaggeration, but we would split for dinner. My fiance and I would split a cheeseburger's pizza with extra cheese from Pizza Hut, or something equally foolish. And of course, we both just made that trend of getting overweight. And then when I switched to a vegan diet, that's when I dropped all that weight. That's kind of funny because it's not what diabetics are traditionally told to eat. They're told to eat high protein, low carb, because low carb, carbohydrates are basically sugars. They turn into glucose. And glucose is supposed to be bad for diabetics. But amazingly, eating a high carb, unprocessed diet, low in fat, and just moderate in protein is what completely reversed the disease. And the traditional prescribed diet for diabetics doesn't do that at all. All it does is delay the use of medication.
Okay. So when you say a balance, how many grams of protein do you think you were previously consuming as composed to what you feel is healthy nowadays?
I would say I was probably consuming, I don't know what how many grams it was because I never paid attention to that.
Okay.
I guess it was anywhere from 30 to 35% protein.
Okay, percentage-wise.
Whereas now, now I'm probably consuming about 15% protein. And it's funny because, like I said, I used to be athletic and I used to play basketball in high school. And I'm 35 now and tougher and stronger and I have more endurance than I did when I was an athlete.
Wow.
People tell you you're supposed to get weaker in your 30s, and I just keep getting stronger. Less protein and no animal protein.
The kind of protein that we feel and know scientifically that our body can utilize to a much greater extent.
Right.
And not have all the negatives attached to it. So then you are totally more than launched into a full-time career that keeps you extremely busy. Maybe you could just, for newer people, and just to remind us that have been around a while, how a good meal layout looks to you. I mean, you can start, why don't you just start with what you would say is a good breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
You know, I the breakfast thing, I think, differs for some people. Some people really need to load up on breakfast, whereas I'm more comfortable with just a banana and orange and a handful of Brazil nuts. But I know some people that need to eat oatmeal and maybe some sort of fruit or juice with it, just because they need a heavier breakfast to sustain them throughout the morning. But for me, it'll be, you know, it'll be a couple pieces of fruit and some Brazil nuts for lunch. Lunch is probably my biggest meal through the day. And really, if I'm going out and going to the gym a lot during that week, then I might have something like a lentil soup. But if I'm doing some sort of lighter non-muscle building activity, then sometimes it'll be a Thai curry or even a salad. And dinner is usually a salad for me.
Okay.
And it's not just a bunch of lettuce on a plate. I mean, typically it's kale and red leaf lettuce, roasted red peppers, and carrots, tomatillos. I mean, whatever I can find at the grocery store that looks appetizing at the time. And I don't load it up with high-fat dressings.
Okay, so your salad, you're saying that's an entree salad. That's not a side salad that then you need an entree to make it complete.
No, it's a big plate of lettuce and veggies and me thinking, how am I ever going to eat all this?
And so is there a starch involved with that?
With the salad, not so often. Usually I'm getting that at lunch.
Okay. Okay, so
yeah.
Your situation is that you don't demand that high of amount of starch. Now, especially for people that are cutting back weight-wise, that sounds like a really good plan. I mean, you've got a lot of veggies in there, a moderate amount of fruit in that day, and enough starch, obviously, to be satisfying your body to keep the strength and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the huge advantages is that I feel satisfied for a couple of reasons. One, the foods are more nutrient dense, and our bodies are cued to they're geared to send us a cue that we're satisfied when we get the proper nutrition. So I feel happy with my meal much more frequently now than I did 10 years ago, just because 10 years ago I wasn't getting the proper nutrition, and so I was always looking around thinking, I really want something. I'm sure everyone's had that feeling where you're just like, oh, I want something. I don't know what it is, but I just feel like I need to have something, and I rarely have that feeling anymore. And then, of course, the other reason is that they're high-fiber foods, and so my stomach literally is full on less calories than I was when I was eating these calorie-dense foods.
Okay.
It's incredibly easy to manage my weight with this diet.
Okay. Well, it sounds really, really simple to me as far as thinking about a way of eating. And then it's now turned into some incredible recipes and the best magazine I've ever seen in my life for information. And this last issue on meat substitutes, tell people a little about what you're doing there and how that evolved also.
Let's see. I started out, I actually started my business making salsa. Just because I had this great salsa recipe, and I knew that I didn't want to do what I've been doing before. Before my career was in marketing, and I was the director of marketing for a computer company. And I quit my job to help people once I cured my diabetes, but I didn't know what I wanted to do first starting out, because I knew I needed to make some money. So I started out making salsa. And a couple months after that, you guys are getting the long version of the story here. A couple months after that, I got asked to cater, and so I started the catering part of my company. And just a couple months after that, people around Phoenix started asking me to teach classes. And I started teaching classes, and as soon as I started teaching, I realized that there was this huge need for education on this. And part of the reason is people were scared of the word vegan. And didn't really know how simple it was to cook this way, and they just kind of needed to be eased over that hurdle and get past the nervousness about it. And of course, people always need good recipes. And I decided to start a vegan culinary magazine, kind of like Bon Appetit or Vegetarian Times or something like that, but geared solely towards vegan food. And I didn't want it to be something where people would just look at it and kind of toss it to the wayside. So I made it an educational magazine as well. So if you go into the magazine, you can look at the recipes, and instead of maybe being a third of a page or a half page of recipe like you might see in these other magazines, you'll get the first page with the ingredients and instructions fairly clearly broken down. So you can see them easily in the kitchen, another important thing. And then you'll get information on how to make an incredibly low-fat version of the recipe, how to make a raw version of the recipe if you want to get into raw foods. There's a photograph of the recipe, notes on how to present it, how it works, where to shop, what kitchen equipment you need, the full nutritional profile for the recipe, chef's notes. I mean, usually the recipes are 4 or 5 pages. So not only will you get the recipe, but you'll learn how it works so that you can start doing that on your own in your own kitchen. And it just kind of, it blossomed from that idea that I wanted to educate people. And that's really the key. But the other thing, of course, I did was that I made it digital. So it's a completely online magazine because I thought I could reach way more people that way than I could with a print magazine. And it was also the only way I could do to keep it free. The magazine is also free. Of course, I never give out anyone's information, and sometimes people don't believe me about that. They're wondering how I can produce a 200-page online magazine every month and give it away for free, but the reason I got into this was not to get insanely wealthy off of it. It was to help people. So this is part of the pro bono work that I did.
Well, I am more than impressed. Now, I don't think I heard you say how to get to it.
The way to get to it is to go to veganculinaryexperience.com. And it's a pretty long email or web address. So again, it's vegan, V-E-G-A-N, culinary, C-U-L-I-N-A-R-Y, experience, experience.com. And right there on the front page, you can download the latest issue of the magazine, and this one is about meat substitutes. And you can also subscribe to it for free on the front page.
Well, I don't know how much better it can get than that.
It's going to get better because I'm starting to add videos, and a host of other content in addition to just the regular magazine. So there will be some more podcasts up there, cooking videos, some interactive cooking lessons with me and hopefully some of the other contributors, because I've got about 10 other contributors right now, but definitely some interactive cooking lessons with me too.
Wow. Well, you know, one thing that just popped into my mind that I so appreciated about the way you did things, and I need to let people know that if I understand or remember correctly, you never attended a culinary institute?
No, I really thought about it.
But you've taught in some of these culinary institutes.
I've taught in the Le Cordon Bleu program. So as far as I know, I'm the first vegan chef that's ever taught in the Le Cordon Bleu program over at Scottsdale Culinary Institute. And I think I'm also the first chef that's taught there that didn't have a culinary degree, which surprised me. But pretty honored that they asked me to come in and be a guest instructor and show their students and their instructors even vegan cuisine.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know where my skill came from, because my growing up, meals for me were either what sort of chicken dish am I going to get tonight, or my mom calling and saying, what do you want from Taco Bell? Yeah, I have no idea where that came from. And honestly, I can't really say there are any good vegan cooking schools around in the U.S.
Well, maybe you'll have to be some of the first to instigate that. Well, one of the things that I recall that you said when we had lunch that day was, I think that's when it came up, was why would you want to throw the seeds of the tomato out, strip the seeds out?
Right.
I mean, practical, everyday logic, and yet it's faster not to have to go through that step. So other things that you might do in that arena that wouldn't be per se kosher at a culinary institute when they're really, really, you know, doing their thing?
Well, they have them do crazy stuff, these culinary institutes. And yeah, the tomato thing, I understand it because they're trying to make fancy restaurant food. And of course, diners come into a really nice restaurant, and they're like, oh, tomato seeds, it's terrible. And of course, when they're at home, they're cutting up the tomato and throwing everything in there. They have them do stupid stuff like that. They have them turn, this blew me away. They have them turn a bottle of olive oil over and count to 20 when they're pouring it into a pan.
And what's the science behind that?
Fat tastes good. So they're loading it up. So they're loading the dishes up with fat, and it's kind of a cheat because it's typically traditional French cuisine, restaurant style French cuisine. It's not even country French cuisine, but they're loading it up with fat because it's an easy cheat to add taste into a food. When really, if you just know how to play with spices and get the most use out of your vegetables, you don't need all that oil to put flavor into your food.
Okay, this brings up another issue. I know some of the recipes, I love to use all the herbs, and I don't have a great availability right now to fresh herbs. Rule of thumb when you're using dried versus fresh portion?
Generally, I look at how compact the dried herb is, but usually I'll say half or three quarters the amount dried that you would use if it was fresh. So something says a teaspoon of like freshly minced cilantro, then I might do half a teaspoon of dried cilantro.
Okay, so for you, because you live in an area where you have access to all of this, and you know, probably all year long being fresh, how often do you substitute dried?
Never.
Never now, okay.
Yeah. Some kind
I bet
of
you did at the beginning, though, when you first started, right?
I did when I lived in Fort Worth. But honestly, part of that is because I didn't know how to go to the grocery store and shop for food. I mean, or when I would go to the grocery store, when I was eating unhealthy, I would go to the center of the store, the frozen aisle, and all the prepackaged stuff. And it took me about 6 months to acclimate to going to the edges of the grocery store, which is where the produce aisle usually hangs out, and getting everything there. But once I did that, I noticed I didn't have any problem finding these other ingredients.
Okay, so do you have a huge herb garden in your backyard with just absolutely everything growing, or do you go in and buy them in the little packages that are $2 to $3 a little package for, like, 1 ounce?
I wish I had a huge herb garden growing here, but I'm not a great gardener.
Okay.
so, yeah, I'm usually running off to the store to get whatever I need.
Okay.
I do have some friends with great gardens here in Phoenix, but they're very skilled, because having a garden in Phoenix is not the easiest thing in the world to do.
Right. Now, this went from the, well, the magazine came in later, I know, but also another area is that you ship food, I believe, all over the United States. Or
yeah,
have the availability to do all of the United States.
I ship as far up as New York. So I consider that pretty much all the way across the U.S. I probably ship to most states by now. But I have a meal service that follows along the recipes in the magazine. And I also, if something else, I started to help people out, either give them good vegan food for those people that just wanted something kind of, you know, gourmet and tasty, or to help them on a healthy dietary path. And I give them 12 meals for $100 plus shipping, which is insane. I don't know any other meal service that does something like that. Most of them are charging anywhere from $200 to $300 for the same type of service.
Wow. And you, of course, know how to do this, because you were you on insulin at one point, or?
I was told I had to be on insulin.
You were told you had to be, okay.
And
so you knew how that was packaged, is that correct? Is why, how you quickly figured out how you could get, you know, real food across the country on ice or whatever?
Yeah, it's shipped in a mix of ice and dry ice.
Okay.
And then, yeah, it takes anywhere from 1 to 3 days to show up.
Okay.
And people can go on to my, I'm about to update all the menus for the coming week and for next month, but you can go on my website, veganculinaryexperience.com, and click on the link that says meals, and it'll take you to the meal service page, and all the ordering information is on there, and you can see what I've served for the past 3 weeks.
Okay.
I'm looking at, I've got some of the packaged meals in front of me right now, and this week I did corn cakes with green chili and black bean sauce, buckwheat cakes with dried cherries and Brazil nuts, and I've got a Malaysian curry and a Bombay curry, because the theme's coming up for the next few issues are breakfast items and curries. So like I said, all the recipes follow along with the magazine's recipes. And the advantage for that, for everyone else, is that you get the meals, and then when the next issue comes out, you get the recipe for the meals, too.
So you've already tried the meals, and you know exactly. Say, you're not very secretive about any of this stuff.
No. I it's weird. I meet other chefs that want to hold their secrets, and I'm thinking, why? But I guess I'm in it to educate people and help people. And a lot of the other people that get into this are just about the money.
I think you're speaking to the right group, because our missions definitely run a parallel. And I want you to just make a couple of statements about, and you already have, but I really want this, and this is when I point a finger, three are pointing back at me, to drive home the importance of the food going in the mouth as opposed to the other things. Now, I know I can hear the emphasis on exercise, but we're in this company that has all these wellness technologies. But, you know, everything else you can do, where do you put the importance of the food?
Even before exercise, because when I was losing the weight during my diabetes and getting rid of depression and all these other problems that I had, I did not exercise the first year. Well, actually, it was minimal. I wouldn't call a couple 30-minute walks every week exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was totally a dietary change. I dropped the first 60 pounds just from changing my diet, and cured diabetes solely through diet. And it was only after that that I started exercising. And I think the reason is, we look around at the world, I think our species does now, and we kind of treat it as this huge cornucopia of whatever we wanted. And there's no way that we should be, that we could be the only species on the planet that can eat whatever we want and be okay with it. species is really designed that way. We just treat ourselves that way. And once I realized that there was a certain diet that humans were optimized for, it was pretty easy to figure out after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I feed my roses the wrong thing, they get bug infestations and their leaves start to look wilted. The same thing with my cats. If I feed them an inferior cat food, their coats don't look shiny. But, you know, whatever organism it is, if you put the wrong thing in that organism, they'll start to suffer health effects, and we're no different.
You know, there's a category of us that can look like we're in good shape also, and yet we're violating the basics of what our body really needs as far as nourishment. We may not be overdoing, and we can get by with that for a period of time, and we're still not feeding it properly. Do you agree with that?
I do. In fact, I've got a friend who has an insane metabolism. He eats tons of junk food, drinks sodas, and he's still rail thin, but the problem with that is weight is not the only indicator of health. There are other things that will happen, and a lot of these people won't get heart disease later on, but there's a good chance they'll get cancer or something like that. In fact, I treat cancer patients now as well through diet, and not all of them are overweight. Some of them are incredibly thin people before the chemo, before anything like that. They were very thin people, but because of what they were putting in their bodies, they picked up cancer, and there are even people who can become diabetic when they're thin, just because they're putting too much fat in their bodies. They're not getting the proper nutrition. So even though they might be metabolizing that and burning through the calories quickly, but the other problems of putting bad food into their bodies manifest. But cancer is the big one that I've seen, and then diabetes is kind of secondary. Skin problems, all sorts of stuff like that.
Okay. I know we have some others on the line here that are very anxious probably to ask you a question. So before we wind this up, I would like to give them an opportunity, Brenda, Nancy, Ruth, Jeannie, any of you, as Jason has been talking and giving us so much great information here, come up with a thought that you'd like him to expound on.
This is Brenda.
Hi, Brenda.
Jason, you just mentioned that you treat cancer patients too, and all this work you do, and that's been something on my mind with the effort that we put in to learn all of this all of the time. Is there a risk that you take when you, or do you have like a nutrition degree, or are you able to help people without the credentials of that the AMDs would expect? How do you get around that?
When I'm treating cancer patients, I do it through the auspices of the Cancer Project, and that's a division of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And that is a group of nutritionists and doctors, and basically they put together a program. It's an educational, it's an educational program pretty much, and they talk about the science behind it, and then I come in and actually show people how to practically implement their suggestions, because a physician could be up there telling you exactly why you need to eat well, but chances are they can't really show you how to eat well, so that's where I come in and help. And it's funny because it's the same diet for treating heart disease and obesity and diabetes.
Osteoporosis or any of the rest of them.
And osteoporosis. Yeah. And that should be a cue that it's the right diet, because it treats all of those diseases.
So to clarify, the physician tells the people how to treat what they're doing, and then you show them how to implement.
Right. They talk about the science behind it, and I'm pretty well versed in it too. But I always tell people first, you know, they need to listen to the physician, even though the same things are coming out of my mouth or they're coming out of theirs. So that's it. They provide the science, and I provide the practical implementation for it.
Great answer. Thank you.
This is Nancy. I am just overwhelmed with the amount of information you just shared. It's wonderful. I have two questions. I'm curious, has your family followed you in this path of healthier eating? And when you mentioned 15% protein, does that include animal protein, or is it all from the vegetables?
Okay, so I'll actually answer the second question first. That is no animal protein, no fish, nothing.
Okay.
All plant.
No dairy.
Definitely no dairy. In fact, I've had people give me dairy, and I didn't know it was dairy, and it was like a small amount, like a teaspoon of cheese. And I wouldn't say I was sick for the entire day, but I would definitely be weaker, and I would feel off for the rest of the day. And if it's me, like someone will put chicken stock into something, I will definitely get sick from that. So there's no way I would ever put any sort of dairy or animal protein in my body.
Wow.
To answer the first question, my mom is finally coming around, because I've been doing this for 8 years. And if you remember from the earlier talk, my mom was the one who would either give us one of five different chicken dishes during the week or call and ask us what we wanted from Taco Bell when we were growing up. She's finally realized that she needed to start cooking healthy and getting rid of the junk food, and she's starting to eat the way that I do. She used to think she was eating healthy. She'd get a salad, and then she'd get, like, grilled chicken on it. And I'd be thinking, well, at least you didn't put the ranch dressing on it, but this is still not the greatest thing you should be putting in your body. Now when we go out to lunch, she'll get the salad, and she'll ask not to have the chicken anymore. She'll get something that I'll get, or she'll get some sort of wraps or burritos or whatever it is. But whenever we go out, she gets what I'm getting. And she's dropped 15 pounds in the last 2 months, and she's starting to look healthy again. Her skin is starting to not look as old, which is nice. I'm glad she's finally come around. My dad is pretty much a lost cause at this point.
We all have choices, don't we? Never give up on
that. Yeah, I mean, he's diabetic. He's on 13 different medications. He's had a quadruple bypass. When he was in college, he used to weigh about 140 pounds. Now he weighs 260. Yeah, so, and he's got a host of other health problems, but he's just, I don't think he's going to change. He could change, but I don't think he will. And I don't think my brothers will either. We're all a bunch of pretty big guys. I'm 6'3 and 250, and my middle brother is bigger than I am. So there's kind of that we have to eat mentality that goes along with big guys, and my little brother still has that. He tried to change a little bit. I came home one day, we both lived together, and I came home one day, and he said, hey, I want to try to start eating healthier, and I was like, that's great. And he was like, yeah, I just need to lose some weight. And he walked away, and I opened up the freezer, and it was packed with Healthy Choice meal.
You know, we're at the very, very end here, and I promised I would keep the time down. Jason, I know you already committed to coming back again, and I think everybody on the line is going to say yes to that.
Yeah, I'm certainly happy to come back.
Okay, and I'm sorry I didn't give the other two a chance to ask questions, or three that were on the line here, just for the sake of time and recording. Just to wind it up, you hit one note that really, really registered with me, and I'd like you to just finalize it with the importance of education. Your mission is a parallel to all of us on the line, or we wouldn't be here for sure. The importance of education, the difference between, yes, just in your family, they all see the same information, they hear it from you, they know it. The final is, it's their choice. But just how much more we can do to deliver to other people. You want to sum that topic up?
I think getting other people to listen requires three things. First of all, they're not your family. That's actually probably pretty important because I can get other people to listen if they're not family members. But one, you have to make it easy for people. And two, you have to make them happy when they do it. You have to push someone's pleasure buttons. And that's really the key to changing behavior and educating people. It has to look like it's something they can duplicate, and it has to be something that's going to make them happy. And when you can do that for people and show them a really healthy way to live, they'll follow along with you, and they'll become healthy too. And that's the biggest reward I can have by far for anything that I do. And so I hope you can take that into the other educational venues too.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, that's okay.
Thank you so much. And again, give your website one more time.
It's veganculinaryexperience.com. And if you have any other questions, because I'm sure there was so much more we could have covered, feel free to stop by my website, send me an email, and I'll be happy to answer anything.
Thank you so much. And for anybody that's listening and you need to pass the information on to others, it will be up and recorded at allswell.com. That's allswell.org, shortly for you to go in and listen to. So, again, my hat's off to you, Jason. Keep up the incredible work you're doing that you've started, and we'll look forward to having you back with us again.
Thanks. It was a pleasure to do this.
Thank you. Thanks, all of you guys. Sorry you didn't all get questions, but we'll make sure you do the next time, or if it's urgent, just email him, like you said.